How our differences shape who we are. We are often all too aware of how we differ from the people around us. Perhaps you can recall a past situation in which you were the only person of your gender, sexual orientation, ethnicity, or body type. If you couldn't help but being self-conscious about your differences, you were not alone. As social psychologist William McGuire noted long ago, we are conscious of ourselves insofar as and in the ways that we differ. When he and his co-workers invited children to, quote, tell us about yourself, they mostly mentioned their distinctive attributes. Redheads volunteered their hair color, foreign-born their birthplace, minority children their ethnicity. In the U.S., a Pew survey finds that 74% of black people, but only 15% of white people, see their race as, quote, being extremely or very important to how they think of themselves. The insight is this. Differences determine our spontaneous self-concepts. In my daily life, surrounded by mostly white colleagues and neighbors, I'm seldom mindful of my race, which becomes a prominent part of my identity when visiting my daughter in South Africa, where I become part of a 9% minority. In Scotland, I'm conscious of being American. To be in a numerical minority is to become more conscious of that identity. At times, our acute self-consciousness of our differences may have funny consequences. In one of social psychology's more creative studies, researchers used theatrical makeup to place an ear-to-mouth facial scar on college women, supposedly to see how others would react. After each woman checked the real-looking scar in a hand mirror, the experimenter pretended to apply moisturizer to keep the makeup from cracking, but they actually removed the scar. So, the scene was set. A woman, feeling terribly self-conscious about her supposedly scarred face, talks with another woman who knows nothing of all this. If you've ever felt similarly self-conscious about a physical handicap, acne, or even just a bad hair day, then perhaps you can sympathize. The supposedly disfigured women became acutely sensitive to how their partners were looking at them. Compared with women who were led to believe their conversational partners merely thought they had an allergy, they rated their partners as more tense, distant, and patronizing. However, observers who later analyzed videotapes of these conversations could find no such differences in treatment. Self-conscious about being different, the supposedly disfigured women had misinterpreted normal mannerisms and comments. Consider also a clever experiment in which Cornell University students were asked to don a dorky Barry Manilow t-shirt and were then shown into a room where several others were completing questionnaires. Afterward, they were asked to guess how many of the others noticed their dorky attire. Their estimate? About half. Actually, only 23% did. This spotlight effect, this overestimation of how much others notice us, as if a spotlight were shining on us, extends to our secret emotions. We presume that our attractions, our disgust, and our anxieties leak out and become visible to others. Imagine standing before an audience. If we're nervous and we know it, will our face surely show it? Not necessarily. Even our lies and our lusts are less transparent than we imagine. There's bad news here. Others notice us less than we imagine, partly because they're more worried about the impressions they are making. But there's also good news. Others notice us less than we imagine, and that fact is liberating. Suddenly, a bad hair day hardly matters. And if we wear yesterday's clothes again today, few will notice. Fewer will care. Of those, fewer still will remember.